In today's episode, we talk to Danielle. Danielle is a former teacher and a mom who now works with parents to teach them how to advocate for their children while also empowering them to be capable and independent. Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Bold Little Minds Momcast, a podcast where we talk to incredible moms who share their unique journey to motherhood, practical tips, and some of our favorite low-prep activities so you can enjoy that hot cup of coffee. I'm your host, Chrissy. I'm a mom of two boys. I'm glad you're here with us, so pop in your earbuds and let's have some fun. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Bold Little Minds Momcast. My name is Chrissy. I'm a stay-at-home mom to two young boys, 3.5 and 2, and I am so grateful that you are here with us today. At this point, I have released my website. It is up and running, and it is beautiful. I absolutely love it. There's still work to be done. But I am so proud of the work that I put in to make this gorgeous website that has everything on it. It has all of my products, all of my podcast posts. It doesn't have my blog posts yet, but it will eventually. And it has like an about me section, where to find more resources by me, things like that. It's so exciting. And I also launched with it some brand new products, one of them being my coloring book subscription that I'm so excited about. I'll send people who subscribe to it a new coloring book every single month. And for my Black Friday special, a sweet little birthday theme book during your little one's birthday month. I'm so excited about that. I'm really looking forward to a year of making new themed coloring books for the subscription, but also to sell individually and to continue selling locally. It's been so much fun to do that. O'Shea's Coffee and Tea here locally was my first company that I sold products with. They took a chance on me. And they're featuring me this week in their small business series that they're posting on their social media. And I'm just so honored that they chose to include me. They took a chance on me. And it's been so fun to work with them. I also have up there my brand new custom coloring book party favors that have a customized, personalized cover and 14 pictures inside the coloring book of your choice with your kid's favorite interests, whether it be like food or trucks or princesses or whatever your kid is into. We can work together to make a perfect coloring book for your party favors, which is really fun. You could also do one for your kid's classroom gatherings. So the personalization might not be about your child, but it might be about a whole classroom and what everybody's studying or interested in or that season. So that's another really exciting product that I have up there. And I'm just really enjoying pouring so much of myself into these products and into this website and into this business because it's helping me with my creativity and feeling productive and feeling all of these things, feeling like I have some sort of identity outside of being a mom, because that's something that I've struggled with since I've had kids. I don't know if part of it was because I left my career at the same time, or, you know, I after talking to so many moms now, I know that this is a fairly universal feeling of not knowing who you are as you enter motherhood. So this has really, for me, filled this gap, and I'm so happy to share it with you. And I hope that you are enjoying the products as much as I am enjoying creating them. It's making me feel all warm and fuzzy every time that I work on them and talk about them. It's like, you know, when you have something that you're super excited about and that's all you want to talk about, that's where I'm at right now. So I am loving it. I'm so excited about all of these pieces. This week, I talked to Danielle. So talking about things that make you warm and fuzzy and bring a spark to you, Danielle is a former teacher. She and I aligned on so many teaching practices, like guided math. Like that was my number one thing as a teacher. So we talk a lot about that. Most of that is in the bonus episode because I wanted to keep this part of the episode focused on things that would best benefit the majority of parents who are listening. But if you have a teaching background or if you're interested in learning more about that, then go hop over to the bonus episode to hear us geek out on teacher stuff because I think it was really fascinating. In this episode, you'll hear about Danielle's journey to motherhood, a little bit about how her early motherhood experience was impacted by her child with medical needs. We go into that a lot more in the bonus episode. And we talk about the topics that she's passionate about right now. We talk a lot about her latest guide, which is about independent play. She is an incredible resource about how to get your child playing independently and fostering their capability and their self-reliance to help give them the tools to succeed as they grow. It's all research-based. She's done all the work for you. I loved this conversation with Danielle, and I'm sure you're going to find nuggets of wisdom that you're going to take with you into your parenting as soon as you're finished with this episode. Please take a moment to leave a quick rating and review. If you're on Apple or Spotify, you can click those 5 stars. You can leave a comment in Spotify, or you can go in and leave a quick little, just a couple word rating. If you're on YouTube, click that thumbs up and leave a little comment. Make sure you follow and subscribe on whatever channels you're listening on or whatever channels you have access to, because that is such a powerful way that you can contribute to building this podcast and helping us reach more moms so we can build our community. I have so many big dreams for this podcast, and I would love to continue growing our audience. You can find the bonus episode on my website, boldlittleminds.com. You can join the inner circle by entering your email address and signing up for my free newsletter. Each week, I'll send to you in your mailbox the links to the episode and the bonus episode, where you can access either the video or the audio versions of the episodes. I also include my freebie of the week, as well as tips and tricks, some of the latest things that I'm loving, some of the products that I've come out with. I'm really looking forward to making this newsletter a really great resource for you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I really, truly hope that you enjoy the conversation with Danielle as much as I did. Thank you so much for joining me for the Bold Little Minds Momcast. My name is Chrissy. I am a stay-at-home mom to two young boys, ages 3.5 and almost 2. I can't believe it. And I am here today with Danielle. Danielle is a mom of 3, ages 4, 2, and 1. Danielle is a former teacher and learning behavior specialist. Now she helps parents discover how to bring joy into learning, trusting their child, and helping with independent play skills while also focusing on social emotional learning. Wow. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Danielle.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me and having me. This is so fun, and it's fun for us to just kind of connect.
Definitely. I love all the content you put out. Your page, if you're not following Danielle, make sure you do, because her page is full of amazing easy tips that you can use without feeling overwhelming, without feeling stressed. So I really appreciate your online presence and sharing that with the world.
Thank you. That means so much, because it's kind of, you know, like the everyday of like posting, and it's just like, I hope that this is helping someone, and it's nice to hear. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, we see a lot about how you do things with the kids and the way that you're implementing your learning, but I want to hear about you and your life and what's brought you here to this, because that's something as moms we don't get to talk about very often. So tell me, what was your life before becoming a mom?
My life before becoming a mom was, my life was teaching.
Yeah.
And I always say, I'm like, oh my gosh, if I was like in the classroom right now, I was a really, really good teacher, but I would have been so much better being a mom, like having that perspective. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was all of their babies, you know? But anyway, I poured my life into teaching. I was just talking to a friend. They were like, oh, it's just so sad how teachers don't make any money, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'll be honest, I've never looked up a salary. Like I never even like looked it up to know. I just felt like weird getting paid for doing something that I love so much. And so I started off teaching sixth grade, and then I moved to second grade, and that was kind of like on my forehead. And I just went from different districts, whether it was like a Title I or affluent area, different states. Like I've had tons of experience in very diverse roles. And that's just kind of what I did. And my husband and I were getting our master's at the same time and, you know, kind of just poured our life into that. And it's probably a good time to do it before having kids and stuff.
Definitely. I mean, there's a reason I think teachers start in their 20s most of the time, because there's so much energy and enthusiasm.
Yes, I know. I know. I'm like, can I get a little bit of like Danielle, like, you know, 15 years ago?
No kidding, right? Oh my goodness. Now tell me about your transition to a learning behavior specialist. What even is that? What is that role?
So it's like kind of like a fancy word for like special education. When I went to go back to get my master's degree, I really wanted to dive deep into curriculum and instruction to start like way back. Is I actually originally went to school for psychology.
Okay.
And then fell in love with like the child development aspect of it. But anyway, having a couple of years of teaching under my belt, I was like, okay, we can't be like teaching just one lesson to like 30 kids at times. Like it just doesn't work. So I was really into the small, I did guided reading, guided math. And then I was like, we should do guided science, you know, like all, like there's just so many different levels, even though there's a bunch of second graders. Then when I went back for curriculum and instruction to really enhance my teaching, I decided to also pursue special education, because there were so many kids who needed behavioral support, or they had learning disabilities, or some were even undiagnosed and like it takes time to get an IEP, an individualized education plan. So like I needed to fill that job for them and I wanted to do it right. And I wanted to do right by the parents. I wanted to do right by the kids. And I wanted to be the best for the kids. So I did it, but I didn't want to leave the classroom. I thought about it. I was like, okay, well, I could be like a specialist where I have my own little office and I pull kids. And I considered it. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of opportunities where I was asked to be the special education teacher that would pull kids out. But like, I loved the classroom. I mean, I had so many kids with severe needs, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be everything for them, I guess.
Wow, that's so special. And I totally resonate with what you're saying. And I love what you said about how IEPs take time. Because I don't know if you mm-hmm. saw this too, because I would see kids that very clearly needed an IEP. They needed a support. Mm-hmm. They needed that extra individualized education. And not only did it take time, it was an uphill battle trying to advocate for that child, help the parents. So as a teacher, I found like I was on the parents' team trying to get that support. Whereas, you know, IEPs are money. So you're fighting sometimes the district to try to get the kids the support they need. Did you find that too?
I did. I wasn't a very good rule follower with administration and stuff like that. But I did have some good admin, and then I also had some that, you know, it was just very, you know, how it is. But I did work with the parents, and now being a mom, I'm like, oh my gosh, their kid just like got diagnosed with a disability, or like just say that their kid was diagnosed with dyslexia. First of all, there's like a grieving process that probably goes into this with a parent, right? And they have to just understand this, and then like, then they have to fight for their kid, right? They have to fight for these needs to happen at school, and they have to give that control away, right? From their little baby. And I tried to be that. And I think I did it a little bit too much, where I think a lot of teachers do actually. And that's what leads to burnout, because you're, what you said, like kind of like fighting against a system. And not all districts are like that. I'm a very not anti public school at all. Like, not all places are the same at all. But I think just having a team effort, right? And knowing what's the common goal. Sure, for a legal piece of paper, but the teacher can do changes in the classroom as well. And that's what I would do. I'm like, I don't need a piece of paper to tell me what I legally will do. I will do way more for your child, you know? But yeah, an IEP, it does take time. You have to collect data. You have to select one goal. And I'm like, oh no, we're doing five goals, but it says one. It just depends on, I guess, like where you're at and stuff like that.
Being on the admin side, I know that it wasn't to not give that child support by any means. It's you have to look at more of a conservative financial aspect of, does this child need the extra personnel, or are the supports that they need something that a teacher could reasonably do in their classroom? Like, is this teacher not accommodating and differentiating, or is this something more? So I get it on all aspects of it. For listeners who have children with disabilities or fighting for IEPs, like, your teachers are likely on your side or can give you some good advice, but there are advocates out there if you're looking for resources for just how to navigate this system, because it's not easy.
In one of my guides, which is the social emotional guide, I have a ton of friends who've been in these situations, and I would write their emails, or I would tell them what to say on the phone. So I just wrote scripts and I put them in the guide. I put like, if your kid's doing this, here's some like red flags for every developmental stage. Then here's what you can do. Here's a script that you can have to the doctor. Here's a script you can have for the teacher. Here's a script you can have for the administration. And I wrote it in an email format so that a parent could just use my language. Because a lot of times, from my experience of talking to parents, is just like they feel scared and don't want to, you know, overstep. Mm-hmm. And it's like, let's try and figure out how to make this like a team effort. And I think that it, for some reason, it gets to like the teacher against the parent sometimes, and it's not communicated right.
Right. What a hidden gem you have in your guide. That's amazing.
I know. Everybody who like learns about my guide or gets it, they're like, you're not like marketing this right. I'm like, I'm not a marketer. I don't know how to do it. I just like brain dumped every single piece of information that I've learned and research of like social emotional learning, and I put it into the guide, and there's like so much to it. It was kind of like a therapy like journal for me. Like, let me just write it all down.
Yeah, what do I do with all this knowledge now? Yes, I love that. So what an amazing resource. Definitely look into that. Wow. One was a huge transition for you for so many reasons. What was it like going from one to two?
One to two was a lot easier for me. And I know a lot of people struggle with that. It was very hard going from zero to one, just because, I mean, we didn't know what we were doing, and then the pandemic and then the medical needs on top of that. And then going from one to two, there was a lot of guilt I had associated with having a little baby and then my toddler. But they're 18 months apart. Like, they're best friends. They fight all the time too, but they're best friends. And then going from two to three, I mean, that's like having 13 kids. I'm like, that is really different than two.
Yeah.
It's like, for the last three kids, I'm like always pregnant at this time. So anytime I'm like talking to someone, I'm like, oh, guess what? They're like, you're pregnant. I'm like, No, I'm not pregnant. Like, three is a lot.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny, because the same thing happened to me when my youngest turned around the same age. It was like 9 months, right? When I got pregnant with him the first time around. So when he turned, my younger one turned 9 months, I like had this bug, like I need something in my life. I'm out of survival mode. I can sleep a little bit more. I'm functioning. Mm-hmm. But I know I do not want another one of these. So what am I going to do instead?
That's a lot, yeah.
Right? And it was like this identity crisis of, how do I fill this now emptiness that's not just taken up by by literally surviving? Did you feel any sort of identity crisis?
I did. I think like my anxiety and like my guilt just really, and it still just like gets the best of me all the time. But yeah, that's actually why I kind of started doing things online. When I first started, I was like, oh, let's like make learning fun and show STEAM education. Like, that can be done at 2 years old. So I started doing that. But like, the feedback I was getting was like, this is amazing, but you're making me feel like a really bad mom. And I was like, oh my gosh. I had multiple people say like, I could never do. And I'm like, okay, so I do not want to come across as like an account. There's enough out there that's like, oh, they have their whole life figured out. And I don't want to do that. And I'm still struggling with like messaging and like how to come across as like someone to help. Mm. So I like took a step back from that. And I was like, there's enough on to make people feel bad about, you know, not being able to do these activities. And the truth is, you don't have to do activities with your kids every day. And even though it looked like I was doing it every day, I really wasn't. Like, I was filming like once a week, and then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not getting my message across right. So then I was like in this crisis of like, I don't know what to do. So I was like, what's the most important thing I would want parents to know? And I was like, okay, I'll start with social emotional learning. And then now I'm just like, let's get back to basics of play. Yeah. Like, you know, babies are born with this skill, and then they get lost and they forget, and you could reteach it. And there's like these habits that will form, and then kids will lose that like spark and that intrinsic motivation. Mm-hmm. And I want to help get it back. I think my purpose is to genuinely help. And I've seen the kids come on the other side of like feeling lost with learning and then finding the joy again. It's like almost like, how can I prevent that like problem from happening with like kids at like 8, 9, and 10? There's already like little, especially little girls who are just like not into science or math. And I'm like, that was me, and I'm trying to help, you know? Right. So.
Now, you said something in our little discussion before about kids being so capable. And I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on that. I think this ties in really nicely with that sentiment.
Say that your kid spills a mess all over and it's like, oh, just, you know, like just step aside. I'll just do it. That is teaching them that mommy can always just do it better. Right. Even though your kid has like a dustpan and a little broom and they're not getting anything in there, you just let them be because they're not asking for your help and they feel like they can do it. But the second that you're in all good intentions, you can do it a lot faster, but they're capable of it as well. And that's how they learn and that's how they discover. And it's like these like little things that we even say to kids of like, oh, don't put the paint in that one. It will mix. It's like, let them figure out that it mixes. That's such a cool learning opportunity.
Right. I see that so much. Like, it takes a lot of foundational work and modeling and showing, and but then setting an expectation of, I'll say a lot to my kids, like, you're responsible. I want to see some responsible behavior, but without trying to make it a battle. So mm-hmm. like I have that expectation that they're going to clean up, but I'll do it alongside with them, or you turn it into a game, or you do these other things. Yeah. So that way it's not just on them, because that's scary when they're that young. Like I mm-hmm. like, this is a huge mess. Like it's bigger than they are. So like, it's right. okay to help and to turn it into something. But then all along, you know, you can influence what's happening. Like it's not that I'm helping you. It's like, wow, look at what you are doing. You are cleaning this part. You're doing all of these. And mm-hmm. and then yeah. they hear that and it starts to become real.
Right. And it's so true. Like making it like a game or something. Like my kids, I'm like, I don't know what I did wrong, but they despise cleaning. I have to do all the like tricks and stuff yep. like that. Like, I even bought in my independent playroom, I just bought like a little, they like buttons. Yeah. So I bought this button that like people use at like bodybuilders use at the gym to like record their reps. And I'm like, every time you clean up something, you get to press the button.
Oh, cool.
And we're gonna keep track. Yeah. And it's a big hit. And it's like, you celebrate those like little things and don't over praise right. like every little thing, but it's like making them feel good about it. There is tons of research out there for kids doing chores and yeah. kids having that kind of responsibility and stuff like that.
You've been doing a lot about independent play recently, which is really interesting. I love learning about it. One thing that I've noticed with my kids, and I think it's important for other people to hear too, because it can be frustrating when you're thinking my kid won't do this, is sometimes, I know for my kids, and your kids probably need it too, is they need something really directed first. Maybe it's really directed gross motor time, or maybe it's really directed sensory thing, just something that's heavy work, whether it's physical or mental heavy work. And then once that's over, maybe that was only 5-10 minutes, they go in and they do the blocks and the imagination mm-hmm. comes out and all of those things too. Do you see that with your kids?
I did when I was building the skill.
Sure.
Now my kids, that's where they want to be. I actually lock the room because yeah. I like, they want to do it all day. Yeah. But when I was building it, I think it's very important for parents to, I say 15 minutes, put your phone down. Yeah. And sometimes parents don't like to play like the play pretend, and that's fine, but do it like 15 minutes. Or if you only have 5 minutes, fine, give them 5 undivided attention minutes, right? Like mm-hmm. to just do whatever they want to do. Let them lead. You just follow along and like fill that cup of emotion and connection and quality time. And so that they're not seeking it yeah. in that independent play time. But I think it definitely depends on the kid. Like my older son, he would be totally fine not doing heavy work and just reading a book with me for 5 minutes or so. Sure. And then my second born, you need to like smush him in some pillows. You need to have him climb. So it just kind of depends on the kid. But I think that what you said right before, like if you're filling that emotional cup ahead of time and that physical cup, like that's going to set them up for success. And that's what we want to do, right? We don't want to like direct and say, nope, you got to go play, right. play. You know, it's like, what can you do to set them up for this like exciting, successful moment?
Right. You can't go into it thinking like, okay, I'm really tired right now. They're going to go play and I'm going to have this moment. Like you got to put in a little bit of work first to fill those yeah. pieces, fill that cup. So that way, and mm-hmm. it just comes, they just start doing it. You don't have yeah. to point them in the direction. You know, sometimes a little prodding helps, but
yeah,
that, like giving them the right definitely. Tools or whatnot.
Yeah.
I love to ask everybody their favorite go-to activity when they need that few minutes and they need something a little more directed. What are your go-to things that you present your children with for an opportunity for that play?
Well, instead of just like saying a tool, I'll probably just go to an extreme of a kid having really low confidence or like scared to make mistakes. I've had a lot of students with like early onset of anxiety and even experiences with one of my children who can't even draw because they're too scared of making a mistake. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to the more extreme side. And I guess like a go-to activity for me is to, I love connecting through literacy as mm-hmm. well. So like there's this little tiny little board book and it's, I think it's called Spilled Milk or something like that. And we just read it and it's the perspective of like a little spilled piece of milk okay. and what you could turn it into and what it looks like. So, you know, using your creativity to see like this like blob, but then it actually looks like a horse, or it look, you know, it's kind of like what you do with like clouds, you know, like you see something in the clouds. And then what I like to do is use chalk and like, let's just draw a blob. What do you think we could turn this into? Those are the kids who hate making mistakes, and they're perfectionists at a very, very young age. And it's a very real thing. It's a lot of kids do struggle with that. And it's like, after they can see this like different world, like even my son, who is a perfectionist and he messes up at first, he'll be like, and then he'll be like, I can make it better. Right. Like, but he wasn't always like that. Right. We had to do a lot of practices with, let's just make a mess. What does this look like? What could we turn it into? Like, how could we turn it into a game? Maybe you're making the mistake and like having them point it out from you. So I like to kind of tie in like the social emotional piece to it, but using mistakes is kind of like an activity. And then I guess like for actual tools, I love using just random stuff that like, you know, like how babies go in like the cupboards and stuff and they play with like the pans. Like that's what they like. That's why there's all those jokes about it and stuff too. So like the things that your kids want to play with, like Q-tips or toothpicks or and glue, like let them play with it. So many toys are amazing, right? Like, and they're so much fun, but my kids play a lot longer and have a lot more fun with like the everyday stuff.
100%. Yes. If I open up that pots and pans cabinet, it's a gold mine. I mean, not only are they then playing with the pots and pans, but then they're also going into the empty cabinet and pretending it's their house. Like, it's a whole thing.
Yes. Why is that a thing? Like, my son was in the late, like, you know, Lazy Susan. Yep. He was in there. I'm like, how do you get in there?
How did you do that? We'll go to, in the winter, we get a Y membership and we'll go to the Y. And in the middle of the day, it's pretty quiet. And their favorite thing to do is go in the locker room and just lock themselves in the lockers. Like, it's the same idea. They just love these little, them size like spaces. It's so cute. It's so fun.
So cute. Yeah.
Do you have any final words of wisdom to share with us? I can't believe that we've already been talking almost an hour.
I know. I feel like we should like have a coffee and just chat about teaching. I didn't realize like how much, you know, of the education field that you were in. Right. And it's really cool to connect with you. And I'm like, ooh, like I'm going to make you go live with
me. We'll have to do this again.
We'll have to like talk all things math or something like that. But last words, I guess, just be your child's biggest advocate. Mm. Like, I don't believe that there's a parent out there who doesn't truly want the best. They're just like overwhelmed, overstimulated, or overworked and might not know what to do. But like kids, and this sounds so simple, but like kids are real people. If you look at them as just like this individual, instead of just like this little kid who just needs to learn, they can teach you so much. And if you really listen and you hear them and you value what they have to say and their own opinions, like everything's going to be so much easier and it's going to be so much more enjoyable. And that's when like kids really start to thrive.
Totally. Where can people connect with you and what resources do you have to offer them?
Right now, people connect with me on Instagram, which is my handle name is Steam Made Simple, and then also email, which is steammadesimple@gmail.com. The resources I have right now is I have my social emotional guide, which is called Raising Emotionally Intelligent Kids. It's really about figuring out your kids, like kind of what we talked about, like their sensory profile and what they need, and then curating a space to help teach proactively and help your kid through meltdowns and what about the red flags and, you know, all of the social emotional piece. And then I also have an independent play guide that walks you through like a research-based proven like step-by-step guide that will help even a kid, if they can play for 0 minutes, and they will be able to play independently if it's followed and it's consistently followed. And then I also do support calls for parents if they need that as well. So that's what I have right now. I have like so many projects in my mind. I'm like, I should do a podcast too. That's so fun. But like, I don't have any of that right now, but just trying to have fun, support parents and, you know, share as much as I can.
I love it. Well, definitely watch Danielle because she has big things coming one way or another, whether she knows what they are or not. They're going to be here in the world before we know it. If you liked this episode, please make sure that you leave a like or 5 stars if you're on Spotify or Apple. leave a comment, a rating, a review. Make sure you share with your friends. The more that we share and like this, the more we can share this with other moms who are also looking for a community and a connection. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Pinterest, all of the things at Bold Little Minds. And if you'd like to share your story, you can connect with me on one of those things, or you can email me at boldlittleminds@gmail.com. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode, and I will see you next time. This is the end of the episode, but it is not the end of the conversation. To hear more from Danielle, including listening to me and her talk more about our teaching experience and the things that we're passionate in teaching, as well as hearing Danielle's experience in her early motherhood journey with a child with medical complications, you can join us over at boldlittleminds.com for the bonus episode. I hope we'll see you there.